Oscar-winning actress Jennifer Hudson faces a family tragedy and questions about whether neighbors should have done more. Plus, what looked like a racial incident on the campaign trail is now looking like a hoax. On today's Bloggers Roundtable, we've got Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog, Kay Tempest Bradford of the Angry Black Woman blog, and Corey Richardson, who blogs at vexedinthecity.wordpress.com. Hi, folks.
Hi there.
So let's start out with this horrible tragedy that people are paying attention to around the world through the internet, through all sorts of different ways. Jennifer Hudson, she went from being an American Idol contestant to an Oscar winner for Dreamgirls. But on Friday, her mother, Darnell Donerson, and brother, Jason Hudson, were found shot to death in their Chicago home. Now, Hudson's 7-year-old nephew had gone missing. Police have found a boy's body in the back of an SUV that they were looking for in a manhunt, but they have not identified the body. A lot of people think that it is probably the Hudson boy. Now, the estranged husband of Jennifer Hudson's sister had been questioned in the killings, but they have not charged him in the crime. That man spent 7 years in prison for attempted murder, vehicular hijacking, possession of a stolen vehicle. Now, there's so many angles to this. Let me start with the family angle. Tempest, Jennifer was willing to give her mom money to move, but her mother, you know, has roots and wanted to stay in the neighborhood. What is it? Is this yet another example that you cannot fix other people's lives, that your plan for other people's lives and for keeping them safe is something that may be unworkable? And what must it mean to this young actress that, you know, she tried and this unfolded?
Yeah, it's such a terrible, you know, situation. And it is true that, you know, when even if you have personally achieved success and you want to, you know, get your mother, get your family out of the neighborhood where you grew up, that may not necessarily be the best neighborhood, it doesn't surprise me that there would be still some people who are reluctant to leave. You know, the reports I read said that her mother just had a lot of ties to that neighborhood. And I can relate, you know, the neighborhood that my grandmother lived in, I spent a lot of my childhood, and it's not the best neighborhood right now, but, you know, we have roots there. We want to stay. But, you know, could that lead to something, you know, along the lines of this? Maybe. But I like to choose to think that, you know, there are, that it can get better, that, you know, the neighborhood would go back to being the way it was when I was growing up. And perhaps Jennifer's mother felt the same way. Perhaps she felt secure there because she knew the neighborhood.
Anthony, let me read you a little something from the Chicago Sun-Times columnist Richard Roper. He said, "Sadly, gunshots are so commonplace in that area that even though neighbors heard gunshots at 9 a.m., nobody called police. A family member found Donerson in the living room around 3 p.m. and called for police, who found the second victim in a bedroom in the house. For all the years I've lived in the Chicago area and for all the years I will live here, it will probably be this way. We're all in the same time in the same place, but within that place, there are parallel worlds." First off, people not calling the police when they hear gunshots. Do the neighbors bear any responsibility or burden for just not paying attention or not thinking that this was worthy of comment?
Well, one of the things this reminds us is that the state of affairs in the neighborhood was so bad that gunshots is sadly seen as simply background noise. It's sort of like screeching tires or car engines or sirens. And sadly, we see a case where if neighbors actually called the police whenever there was gunshots, the phones would be ringing off the hook. And what happens is that because gunshots have become standard sort of background noise, no one actually acts until they actually see a body. Because gunshots are simply a part of everyday life, and that's really part of the deeper tragedy here.
There's this other aspect, the parallel lives, which is that, you know, we can all operate in the same time and space, and yet you never really know what's happening in someone else's life. And of course, when you take that to the level of celebrity, Corey, you have this woman who is in The Secret Life of Bees, who now has this Oscar, who has a new album that's doing really well. What do you think are appropriate reactions by fans. And what I mean by that is that we live in a world where you can contact celebrities through, you know, MySpace, Facebook, you know, through their agents' offices, all these things. When, you know, any time I've seen a story online about this, there are posts on message boards. But beyond that, what do you think is fair game in terms of responding as a fan or a supporter? And what do you think is off limits?
Well, I think that, you know, it really is up to the person in question who has been the victim or, you know, is associated with the victim of the crime or the tragedy. You know, so if Jennifer Hudson were to say that, you know, don't send me cards, don't send me flowers, donate to an anti-violence charity or don't, you know, I don't, you know, don't just send me a message, but, you know, let's use this instead of just a moment of personal tragedy, but also a time of collective reflection as to, you know, what's going on in our neighborhoods. I think that's one way of looking at it. In terms of from the side of the fans, you know, it's like watching anyone else that you know experiencing something, you know, horrible, and you don't quite know what exactly is the right thing to do because people respond differently. You know, in this case, I guess because of where we are now in our society and that we are ultimately voyeuristic in that line between what's, you know, what's off limits and what's within bounds with our celebrities. You know, we have Bossip, we have Perez Hilton, we have all these different sites that you can go to and find out so much that we almost have this personal kinship and connection with celebrities. And so people feel like, wow, if that happens to so-and-so, it's almost like it happened to me. And so therefore, I gotta write a card, I gotta send a letter, I gotta send some flowers or something.
Well, we, like everyone else, want to send out our thoughts to the family, and it's just one of those things that it's a real tragedy. We are going to go ahead and take a break, but I want all of you guys to stay with us because we have plenty of other things to talk about, including politics. So next on News and Notes, we have more from our bloggers, plus When Gospel Meets the Spirit of Competition. It's called the How Sweet the Sound Tour, and we'll tell you more. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Welcome back to our Bloggers Roundtable. Today we are talking with Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog, Kay Tempest Bradford of the Angry Black Woman blog, and Corey Richardson, who blogs at vexedinthecity.wordpress.com. So I'm going to keep on trucking and talk about the case of the McCain mutilation, maybe that's what we'll call it. Last week, a 20-year-old McCain volunteer reported to the police she was attacked by a robber at an ATM machine in Philadelphia. She said the robber got angry when she saw that she had a John McCain bumper sticker on her car, proceeded to punch her in the back of the head, pin her down, and carve the letter B into her cheek. And you can see on our website, News and Views, nprnewsandviews.org, a picture of her with a black eye and this bee, this reddened bee on her cheek. She said that the suspect told her, "You're going to be a Barack Obama supporter." Well, later this girl admitted she made up the entire story. She had described her attacker as a 6'4" black man wearing shiny shoes. Tempest, why do you think somebody would go ahead and run a hoax like this?
Well, mainly because it speaks to an unfortunately sort of archetypal fright that people have, but I guess more accurately it'd be white people. I mean, because she's drawing on very specific and well-known stereotypes. A large black man attacks a young white woman, oh noes. And it's such a familiar narrative that it doesn't surprise me that this, you know, when she concocted this plan, that this is the first thing that came to her mind. And in another time, she would have been believed without question. But as somebody on the ABW blog pointed out, this is because of the internet, because of the way that news and information like this moves, that it was like really easy to disprove. It was really skeptical to begin with. And it's sort of like an old media smear campaign. So, yeah.
So what you're saying is that in addition to everything else, she didn't do a good job at trying to hoax people.
No, definitely not. Because it just, first of all, she said that she was at an ATM. All ATMs have cameras. So it was really easy to prove that no one came up to her while she was standing at the ATM. She carved the B into her face backwards and upside down and badly. And it didn't, and just in general, it just didn't seem like something that somebody would do. Muggers don't generally tend to make political statements.
Corey, let me go to you. The executive vice president of Fox News wrote on his blog before the woman admitted she made up the story, "If the incident turns out to be a hoax, Senator McCain's quest for the presidency is over, forever linked to race baiting." Now, of all the things that would link a campaign to race baiting, I'm not sure that this is the one. But why do you think the vice president of Fox would have chosen this as this kind of line in the sand?
I think that, I mean, at this point, really, that was the moment that the McCain campaign jumped the shark. You know, that was the exact time when just everyone looked at the McCain campaign and was just like, oh, this is nothing more than a confederacy of dunces and a serious string of inexplicable errors.
You know, I don't but think it's not it like the McCain campaign hired this woman. You know, they didn't.
No. And the problem is not John McCain. The problem is his campaign. The problem is that there are people around him who would use this as some type of, you know, again, line in the sand and go, see, you see how these Obama supporters are? You can't trust these Obama supporters. They're a bunch of thugs. You know, and then there's other people who would look at this and think, okay, well, we saw this before with Susan Smith. You just blame a black guy. You say he's 6'4". When I heard the description of the alleged mugger, I was like, I think I know that guy. He described half of my friends. So, you know, I just think that at that point, it had reached such a tenor of silliness and such a point of just absurdity that, you know, when the Fox News vice president says it'll reach, you know, they've talked about the race baiting and all that, he was just saying that now it's officially gotten that dumb, you know.
Anthony, let me go to Anthony. There was that time when some of Senator Obama's volunteers hustled along these Muslim women so that they wouldn't be in a camera shot. And that got a lot of concerned commentary this summer. Of course, there was an apology. You haven't heard as much from the Obama side of there being incidents that cross a line verbally, but there have been, you know, from supporters, things that definitely are in questionable taste at best. One of them is that in West Hollywood, there is a Halloween prop in the front yard, a couple of guys who have a mannequin dressed as Sarah Palin hanging by a noose. They have a whole little explanation on video sort of saying, well, it is a Halloween month and we wouldn't do this in any other month, and we wouldn't have done it with a black male mannequin, that doing it with a white female mannequin is different. How do you buy into something like that where you've got a Sarah Palin figure hanging by a noose?
Well, it just reminds us that people in our country have some real serious issues. I mean, the woman in this hoax had some mental problems that related to this, and also for these guys out in California, what you find is that people, for some strange reason, have chosen these images of violence to somehow communicate some of their own political positions. Now, what's interesting about this particular news situation is the idea that it's sort of art. The guy said that it's sort of Halloween and spooky. Is quite questionable because Halloween, you know, typically Halloween costumes would be about fictional characters or people that it passed on for generations. And because this guy is doing it at his private residence, I mean, he does have some freedom to do that. But I actually am okay with the fact that we live in a country where people can be free to do things like this. It's one of the trade-offs with respect to being this free, that people are free to do really dumb and stupid things. And that's something that we have to actually sadly bear the cost of.
Tempest, there's also something else. Governor Palin still answering questions about the $150,000 in clothes that the party lent to her and her family. Is this something that people should be scrutinizing, or is this just a small issue at a time when we should be thinking about the issues of governance, as opposed to, well, what is she wearing and will she return it on time?
Right. I definitely agree that this is a really stupid thing to be focusing on. I mean, I can understand it a little bit if it is in the context of how is the McCain campaign spending their money, spending the Republican National Party's money on the different campaign things. But at the same time, nobody is asking about, as someone pointed out in an op-ed piece, nobody's asking about John McCain's, you know, shoes that cost over $500, and, you know, how much is his wardrobe costing, and how much is his hair and makeup costing, because, you know, he doesn't have a lot of hair, but somebody does it. So it's a dumb thing to focus on, really, and it really just speaks to the whole sexism thing that has been going on since this campaign started. You know, they did it to Hillary, they're doing it to Sarah Palin in a different way, but it really just comes down to nobody has questioned, you know, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, or John McCain on their hair and makeup costs, but they're questioning Sarah Palin. I'm no fan of hers, but this is kind of ridiculous.
All right, on that note, we're going to have to wrap it up. We're getting so close. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Farai.
No, thank you.
We were talking to Anthony Bradley, creator of the Institute blog, who joined us from the studios of KWMU in St. Louis. Kay Tempest Bradford of the Angry Black Woman blog joined us from our NPR studios in New York. And Corey Richardson of the blog Vexed in the City joined us from KUT in Austin, Texas.